All right, everybody. So today, back on the podcast, we have Jeffrey Verity Schofield. How are you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How you been?
I'm good, man. So we were just talking a little bit about, what we're doing in our lives and whatnot, but kind of the bleeding of your passions into your careers and some of the pros and cons with that, right? And this is something, ever since I started the podcast, I've had people ask me, do you ever think you'll just do this full time and you'll drop your career? And I've always said, certainly not in my case. I don't really have the interest to do it. It would be probably a poor financial choice for me as well. But even that aside, I just for me, when it would be all fitness all the time, I think even like the working out aspect, like we were saying, has almost kind of been poisoned by that. And like it just becomes like you're always on. Everything's got to be documented for your fitness world and everything. But obviously, you do it. Steve Hall does it. Most of the people I've had on podcasts have done it. So how have you kind of balanced that so it doesn't take away your passion?
Well, I've kind of chilled out a little bit because there was a time when I was working like, 80, 90 hours a week. You wake up, you work, and then I would work all morning, and then, 2 p.m., go to the gym, and then get back at like 4 or 5, and then work until midnight or 1 a.m. or something. And so, I've kind of chilled out a little bit where I'm not trying to get out a video every single day because, for a while I was uploading every single day.
Wow.
And
How long do you do that?
I think it was like a 2 week challenge that I did just for
Okay.
myself.
Wow.
But, even apart from that challenge, it was like 4 or 5 times a week. And you can do it in the short term, but it does catch up to you. I think people don't realize how much work goes into a video because they might think, oh, yeah, it's like a 10 minute video. It probably took like an hour or two to make.
Right.
But, it's a lot more than that. So I've kind of like chilled out a little bit because when I don't know, like if there's a gun to your head or your back is against the wall, like you have to, you have that motivation, I guess it's like the wolf at the bottom of the hill is hungrier than the wolf at
Yeah.
the top of the hill or towards the
Right.
top of the hill, but I'm kind of taking a long-term approach because I see a lot of channels like blow up and then fall off. So they have this sort of like 2, 3, 4 year climb, and then they kind of just like go, who
Yeah.
knows what. And so I'm taking a more just sort of long-term
It's
approach
always
with it.
interesting to see, though. I see that a lot, especially on Instagram, maybe even more so than YouTube, although you see it on YouTube as well, where somebody has a really disproportional number of followers or subscribers compared to, let's say, likes or views. The engagement is way lower. Obviously, there's going to be some instances where somebody just bought the followers and subscribers, but I think in most cases, it's just there was a period where everything, certainly with like cryptocurrency YouTube channels, of course, like you saw that stuff, but even in the fitness world,
That
it's just interesting to see that. I'm actually surprised with myself that I've had just a obviously I don't have a very big channel, but just the it's almost been identical throughout my now 5 years podcasting. Like the views, the growth has been almost identical month to month, which is kind of shocking. But like you, I would rather see that, even if it's at a lower level, than just like a big spike. And then you're almost always trying to chase that next thing. And kind of goes back to the original topic.
It's the steroids of YouTube views because you
Yeah.
get this big spike early and then your doctor says you're gonna die and then you gotta go off and then you're always left dreaming of those days when you were 280 pounds or whatever. So I've taken more of a long-term approach where I don't even check analytics much anymore. I mean, I know some people who and most big channels do this where they change the title and the thumbnail during the first hour
Oh,
because
yeah,
you
I've
see how
seen.
many views you're getting per minute.
Yeah,
So you
yeah.
can change the thumbnail, change the title. Oh, wow, this one's doing better. And then you can, and the video does do better if you do that.
Yeah.
You can see, okay, this video popped off. Now I'm going to make 8 more videos with the same thing, right? And so, I don't really play the YouTube game because, it's a shitty game,
Yeah.
it results in worse content and I find it kind of obnoxious. I've noticed channels that tend to go down that road, they do better, but the content is worse, right? And
Yeah.
I think that's why there's almost no correlation between the size of a YouTube channel and the quality of the content.
Right.
Maybe it's a
Right.
little bit of correlation, but it's not that strong. And so, you know, I'm not really in any rush to, you know, hit any big subscriber numbers or anything like that.
Yeah, I think people would be surprised at how much that goes into a video. I mean, even like mine, that's, you know, pretty low level with the editing and whatnot. Sometimes I'll look and I say, okay, so my personal goal is I want to have one video a week. That's kind of like the level I'm at. That's what I want to be consistent with. And I've been extremely consistent with that, at least on average. And so when I look at that, I might say, okay, well, just put out a video and it'll be 12 minutes. But it's like, sure. But when you actually consider the recording time and the editing time and getting the thumbnail and all of that, it can be, I mean, I'm sure people who have huge channels with editors, they just talk and then they say, okay, team, take over, you handle it. But if you're doing it yourself, it can be quite involved.
Oh yeah. No, it's, cause you have to plan it out, and then I don't script it out, but I have like pretty detailed bullet points,
mm-hmm.
and then I film it in chunks. So I have maybe 15, 20, 25, like 10 to 45 second chunks where I'm talking about one thing, and then I stop the camera, you know, look at the next thing, start it again,
okay,
say the thing, and then stop it. And so it's, you know, I have to fuse all those chunks together, you know, taking out the very beginning and the very end, because no one wants to see me, like, you know, stopping the camera and, you know, looking at my notes and shit like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and I don't want to waste anyone's time, right? Like, I think I've gotten one comment where someone's like, this video is a waste of time, and I was like, oh my, that was probably the worst comment I've ever got. If I get hate comments, like, all right, well, whatever. But someone's like, I felt like I want my 10 minutes back. And I was like, oh, God, no. That's like the one thing. I don't want to be boring, and I don't want to waste people's time.
You
know, I don't want, obviously, help people and have it be informative. And also do no harm. You know, Hippocratic Oath, I think, is a good one for fitness.
Yeah, right, right.
Say helpful stuff, but also don't hurt people. And so, you know, no maxing out the preacher curl challenge over here.
Yeah, right, right, right. That's funny. Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, also, I was going to say that. Right. I was going to say how one of the things that's tougher with my field, but I think also it probably does apply to quote unquote influencer life, at least to some degree, is so like with my job, unfortunately, there's no real ability to say, okay, let's say I'm just getting really burnt out. I can't just say I'm going to take a month away. Like, that's just impossible. Like, my everything would crumble. I would have employees that are just, I mean, it's just all, it would all go to hell. And because that's not feasible, you kind of just have to deal with it. And you just say, I mean, you can take obviously a week off. You could take some days off. Even if you have to take a week off, though, you really have to make sure there's coverage for emergencies and whatnot. So pros and cons, of course. With fitness, I was going to say that's not the case, but to some degree, it's the case. I mean, you could realistically take a month off and come back and it would be okay. Sure. But if you took too much time off, people forget about you so quickly. And then the algorithm, right, exactly, you kind of get lost there. So I've seen some instances where people took some time where they just, I wouldn't say they weren't relevant. But if you look at it, maybe like Omar Issof, Lane Norton, they had periods where they were away and then they did come back. But for a while, they just weren't talked about as much. And you do kind of have to be aware of that as a, again, quote unquote, influencer.
Yeah, no, you have to keep at least a little bit of pressure on the gas. And it's one of those things, like, how often have you heard, hey guys, I'm back. Like, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it does burn people out. And it's, you know, it's, I wouldn't say I'm burnt out, but I am cautious of becoming burnt out.
Yeah.
Which might be a sign of being burnt out. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, I do see it. And I look at other creators and sort of the people who have been creating content for a long time. And most of them are either not uploading very frequently. Because I think once you're a slightly bigger channel, especially if you are going to do it all yourself, you kind of have to take a more measured approach where, okay, I'm not going to... And how often have you seen in a channel banner, new uploads every Tuesday and Thursday or something?
Right, right.
And then, like, the last upload was 5 weeks ago or something, right?
Yeah.
Like, I see that kind of stuff all the time. So, you know, I kind of have, you know, chilled out a little bit with the uploading. And it hasn't really hurt my views. I would say actually I'm able to put more thought into each video. Because if you commit to 3 days a week, okay, Monday, wow, Monday is here. I have to think about a video and film a video and edit a video while also doing coaching and writing and everything today. And then also going to the gym and also like, oh, I have a wife. Like, oh, wow, that's a thing as well. And so like, you know.
Right. Jeff Nippert has done a surprisingly good job of keeping high engagement and view count with very sparse uploads.
Yeah, because the quality is there, I think. It's one of those things where, I mean, all of his videos are, you could tell, after you make a lot of videos, you could tell how much effort goes into a video. And his videos, you know, they're high quality, you know, they're well thought out. And so, for me, his videos are an auto-click, right? Like, if I see the notifications, I see, oh, like, Jeff Nippert uploaded, like, that's an auto-click.
Right? Yeah,
Because it is less frequent. Like, that's part of it. Part of it is the quality, but part of it is that, like, you know, if he was uploading every day, it wouldn't be an auto-click.
Yeah, that's true. Right? Definitely.
It's because you don't see it that often. And so, in some ways, it's a way to drive more engagement, but the quality has to be there as well. Otherwise, you know, it'll just be, you know, sort of a downward spiral. So, but even he, I think, has to, you know, I think he is conscious that it can't be like once every 2 months, right? Like, you know, once every couple weeks is probably okay. But yeah, I think at a certain point, because how often do you get in your YouTube recommended page a creator that you haven't watched in like a really long time?
Right.
Probably not that often.
Yeah.
It's a lot more sort of frequency based.
Yeah. So speaking of catchy videos, I've already recorded this video, but it's not edited or anything, otherwise I could have sent it to you. But we're going to talk about, did Jeff break the natty limit? So I know Natural Hypertrophy made that video, and I didn't even see his full video because I mostly just wanted to talk about the general concept of it. And then I did watch your video on it. So then I saw his clips and whatnot. So just initial thoughts, do you think you broke the natty limit, Jeff?
Well, it's almost like a theoretical thing, because if you did break the limit, then it wasn't your limit. And so, like, you didn't break it, right? So it's like everyone is going to have their own theoretical natural limit. I said this in the video where it's like, if you did everything perfectly, drug-free, from birth, you would plateau somewhere, right? Like, there would be a point where the gains you're making are so imperceptible that you're essentially done. Like, when you're gaining half a pound a year or something, or a quarter of a pound a year, I mean, you'd have to be very, very diligent to even see that. And other people won't be able to see that. Or like, how often have you seen a natural bodybuilding transformation where the guy's like, I put on 2 pounds in the last 5 years. And someone's like, well, which one's the before? Is it the left or the right? Like,
So,
you know, a layman can't even see that amount. Even if you're peeled, it's really hard to see. And so if you're not even making visible gains, are you making progress? Like, it's one of those things where, yeah, I think after like 15 to 20 diligent years, yeah, it's just pretty much just mathematics. And I think most people are so far away from that, that when I hear natty limit, I'm like, you know, okay, well, you know, you're not really, you don't even know the basics. Like,
yeah,
you
know, right.
Stop asking me about the natty limit. I mean, most of the people asking me about it are beginners. So it's like, they're trying to see where they could be before they get there, or even close to that. I understand that, because, you know, lifting is a pretty big investment of time and effort and energy, et cetera. And possibly money, you know, if you got my books, but you know, you can't predict where you're going to be, you know? And so I never, even with clients, they're like, how much muscle can I gain in the 3 months? There's no way to tell. Even if you got your DNA sequence, I don't think you could like, it's a 7.6, you know, you're a 7.6 pound guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's what you're going to do. Because a lot of it is completely unknown. A lot of it is out of, you know, the hands of a coach. And so you kind of just have to go in and give it your best shot and keep iterating. And I do think that iterative process can be a way to make your gains more linear than they should be, right? Because I have made better progress in the last 2 years than you would think based on my picture from, you know, 2 years ago when I had been lifting for 6 years.
Right.
Because I, you know, didn't have great training before, right? Like, I was still training hard, but there are a lot of things that you can do to dial it in and keep making good progress even when you think you're done. I think that's where a lot of people are. like they plateau. Okay, you're plateaued on 5.5 hours of sleep. Okay, well, you know, that's expected, right? Like, why would you be making progress?
Yeah, right.
On 5.5 hours of sleep. Oh, you're plateaued, and you don't even know what a double progression is, or like, you know, your just basic knowledge is not really where it should be. Or you see their technique, or even their effort, or their proximity to failure. And so, man, there's so many facets that can be improved, and not even optimized. I think that's where another thing where people get trapped in, where it's like everything has to be perfect. No, it has to be better than it used to be, right? Yeah. And hopefully that's getting towards perfect. But you know, like the limit, you're never going to get there. You're just trying to be better than you were before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot to touch on there. I think it is interesting when you see some of the more advanced people. And I brought up an example before where there was a Brian Whitaker, and I think he's a great example of a really impressive natural bodybuilder. But he had this before and after picture. I believe it was 2 years. And I was probably a teenager at the time. So I was showing it to my mom for whatever reason. And she literally did not believe me that it was a different picture until I showed her that the background was different. And then she's like, okay. But I mean, she just thought it was identical pictures. But I think, you know, you or I could see, it's like, no, there's like this little, see that one vein is a little different, and like this and that.
The lat pokes out.
Yeah, a little bit more. Right, right. But I am surprised at how many people message me either for training or just questions saying, well, you know, I think I'm starting to be maxed out and I'm 4 years into it. And just like, dude, yeah, there's no way. I mean, don't get me wrong, you are going to make most of your gains in those first 5 to 7 years for most people, I think. But I know, Jeff, you're maybe a little bit, I don't want to say a complete counterexample there, but in your case, you said that your training wasn't ideal. And so that's a factor too. I do believe if somebody was doing things, again, quote unquote, optimally or very well, they covered 90, 95% of the bases, right? I think you're at the right age developmentally. Like, I've given myself an example. I started at 12 to 14. Doesn't matter how good my training is, I'm not going to be maxed out at 18. It's just not going to happen. But if you are 18 to 20, I do think you can probably make most of your progress within the first 5 to 7 years, just from a total muscle mass. If you think of all the muscle that you could gain in your life, above 50% of that for sure would be in that first, let's say, 5-7 years. But
yeah,
I think a lot of progress can still be made afterwards. And I've almost been surprised by certain examples. I mean, when I met Steve Hall, that was, well, now 5 years ago, and he was already, I want to say he was 8 years into lifting at that point. And you look at him now compared to then, I mean, it's a different person.
Yeah.
Abel as well. I mean, Abel's made really good progress over the last few years. And he was, I think, also similar with the timeline. And then you at 6 or 7 years compared to you at, what, 9 years now?
I hit 9 years at the start of this month.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, all really good examples of that.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things where, to be clear, my training wasn't that bad.
Right.
Right? Like, I was still, I mean, 6 years into lifting, this was 3 years ago, I was already in the fitness industry. I was already, you know, writing on Quora. I'd already started the YouTube channel. And so, you know, I knew a lot about training and, you know, I've always known how to push myself. It was just more directing that effort in a more economical manner and just, you know, getting more out of the effort that I was putting in. And so, you know, my training was still, and like I had a decent physique, you know, 3 years ago. Right, like I was still, I think I was, when I was roughly 10% body fat, I was, I think about 84 kilos, 85 kilos maybe. And that's like 180, 185-ish,
yeah,
6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then now this time when I was 10%, I was roughly 90 kilos, I would say, maybe 89. So, you know, roughly, maybe 195, you know, 197-ish. So I put on about 10 extra pounds of muscle, I would say, over 3 or 4 years. And that is very visible, right? Because especially if you're comparing to other naturals, which is part of the reason why I think a lot of actual naturals really dislike fake naturals.
Yeah.
Because they can just, you know, wow, like I was elite until this motherfucker, this guy came right in here, and it was just like, you know, he got to this level so much further because, you know, it's not an even playing field. But if you go from, like, let's say an 85th percentile of jacked to a 95th percentile of jacked, I mean, that's like, that's a big difference. And then every little percentile that you go up is, you know, an even bigger difference visually. Sure. And so, you know, if you think about it in terms of FFMI, you know, fat free mass index, you know, 22 to 23, you're pretty jacked. 23 to 24, okay, wow, now you're really jacked. And as you get closer to 25, wow, now you're like ridiculously jacked.
And that's then, what I was going to bring up, actually, because you were, I just pulled up an FFMI calculator, and, you know, we all know the flaws with it, but I wanted to see, so I just put mine in, and mine's not, I mean, like I said, I'm not really even close at all, obviously, to that 25. I mean, I'm really in, like, between the 22 to 23 range. So let's see, you're 6 feet?
Yeah, 6 feet. I think we're the same height, which makes, I think Abel is also 6 feet.
I'm an inch taller, Jeff. All right, don't take
it. Oh, you're 6 feet. Oh, damn it. Well, actually, that's good for me. Because,
so, you know, wait, are you 6 or 6'1"?
I'm 6 feet. My last three physicals were 183, 183 and a half, 184. And 183 is 6 feet. So I just round down to 6 feet. I'm the only guy who rounds down.
Yeah, six right, feet. Right. Yeah, I'm 6'1 and maybe like an eighth of an inch. So I just say 6'1. I'm holding on to it while I can.
But I got the hair, so.
Yes, exactly. Pop that up. okay, so let's say 6 feet. And then, so the one thing I will also add with FMMI is that supposed 25 limit is supposed to be around 10% body fat. So
right,
people should know that, like, if you're like, well, I'm at 27. Well, if you're 30% body fat, that's a whole different story. Like, the whole idea of that 25 was at 10%. So right, do you know roughly what you would be at 10% weight-wise?
I think this past cut, I was roughly 89 to 90 kilos.
All right, let's just say 89.
90 kilos is 198, so probably like let's just say 195 to be conservative, because I try to be conservative with body fat percentages.
Yeah. So, okay, so you'd be at like a 24 FFMI.
Yeah.
So, and that's one of the things I think I might have mentioned in the video that I made, and maybe at some point we'll get, I don't know if we've had you, me, natural hypertrophy, and Alex on together. I don't think we've done all of us, but
yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway, yeah, that might be a good one afterwards. But so you're at 24, and that's one of the things that Steve Shaw brought up. You know, Steve Shaw has been very complimentary to you and Alex, and said, hey, you know, this is possible and whatnot. But it's like, look, you're still, you know, I mean, I'd have to put in, let's see, how many pounds away. So you'd be 15,
probably.
You'd have to be 205 to hit 10, 25. So
yeah,
even as amazing as your progress has been, and you're clearly an outlier, after all that, you are still 10 pounds away at the same body fat, which it's not mean. So you could maybe gain 10 pounds of lean body mass if you also gain 20 pounds of fat with it, right?
Yeah.
But to gain 10 pounds
of muscle,
yeah, right, right. So 10 pounds of muscle at the same body fat for somebody who's already an outlier. That's why, I mean, look, are there examples of somebody, like, I was actually thinking about this with Lane Norton again. People, one of the things I brought up with natural hypertrophy, saying that he believes there's this almost change in the natural community, and we're seeing more and more of these things. And I said, I don't know if that's really the case. I think he's been around the game almost as long as I have. Ever since I've been in this, I've seen naturals, or people who I believe are naturals, with 18-inch arms. I mean, Lane Norton has 18-inch arms, I believe, in the off season. There's Jeff Alberts, 18-inch arms in the off season. So there are a lot of guys who have been impressive for a very long time. And I don't know what Jeff's FFMI was, but I think Lane's would be probably close to 25 plus. But in any case, still 10 pounds of muscle for you away, that's a lot. I mean, even with your progress, you'd still be looking at years and years from that before you could
probably
say,
4 or 5 years.
Yeah, before you've broken the quote unquote limit. So I don't think most people should have a limiting mindset, but also realistically, most people will never hit 25 plus.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when I hear, the only time I ever hear someone who is like, you know, oh, I'm more than 25 FFMI, but I don't look that jacked, they really fudge the body fat percentage.
Right, for sure. Yeah, there's no way you could not look jacked at 25.
Yeah, like he's not like, you know, I'm 27 FFMI, but I don't look that jacked. I'm like, what's going on over here? But yeah, like the world's largest pancreas or some shit. I mean, it doesn't even make sense. Your pancreas in a wheelbarrow next to you or something, like, right. This doesn't even make sense. Like the world's largest enlarged heart.
There you go. Right. So, yeah.
Someone who's like, you know, I'm probably like 15% body fat. Sir, you're 28% body fat. I'm going to need you to rerun.
Everybody is 15%. It's always 15%. Yeah.
Yeah. Because higher than that, I blame men's health, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. I've seen so many articles where they're like, this guy got down to 1% body fat. And it's like, okay, right. 11 or 12%. Come on.
Yeah.
And so sure. They've been considered. I've actually considered making a video about this. I don't know if it'll be soon or not. I haven't been sued yet, actually.
You know, oh, yeah?
That'd be fun. But, you know, they have consistently pretty trash content, especially with body fat percentages. And it goes back to that whole, what is popular is not good, and what is good is sometimes not popular.
Does Men's Health have a YouTube channel? I've never really looked.
They do. It's mixed. I'll be gracious and say it's mixed. So some
1.34 million subscribers.
Yeah, a lot not so good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it is cool to see people who have been making progress for such a long time. I just think it, like, and you know, natural hypertrophy and I have talked several times about the balance between putting out messages that are the most helpful versus the most true. And I think that's just a very interesting topic. But I actually I lean towards his argument in that, you know, most people don't need to hear the whole genetics thing. You know, most people don't need to hear some of those things. So I totally get it. I do understand the argument.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it matters. But I think people often use it as an excuse and often hyper-focus on that. Like I was watching this other content creator who I won't name because I like their content overall. And it's like every other sentence they said, like, your diet and your training will determine your results. But then, of course, genetics. It was like every sentence, everything was like, here's a bench press. And, you know, this is good bench press after a year, but it also depends on your genetics. And I'm like, wow, every sentence you have to qualify the genetics thing. And it's, I think at a certain point, if someone has, you know, just average genetics, they're going to use that often as a way out. Like, oh, I didn't get results. And it was because of this. Well, maybe, you know, it's going to shift your results, but often people are doing a whole bunch of other stuff that is actually shifting the results
right.
the way that they want. But because all of that stuff requires thought and consistency and energy and effort and actually thinking about the process, well, it's a lot easier just to say, well, genetics, and then, you know, give up and go do something else, or, you know, just happily become a lifetime intermediate, that kind of stuff. So I do understand NH's perspective. And I try to err on the side of optimism, but, you know, I'm never going to like promise anything for anyone because I just don't know.
Yeah.
So when you're making general videos, it's tough. It's tough because, you know, when I have a client and they have a specific goal, I know if it's reasonable or if it's just not going to happen, or rarely if it's, you know, too low. If someone's like, they've been lifting a couple of years and they're like, I want to put on 5 pounds of muscle in a year, I'm like, yeah, like, hell yeah, we can do that. That's very reasonable.
Yeah.
But if it's like 30 pounds,
yeah.
And I've seen something like that. Someone wants to, you know, they're 30% body fat, super out of shape. They're like, in a year, I want to be 10% body fat.
Right.
The same weight. And I'm just thinking like, okay.
Yeah.
Let's math some math here.
Yeah, and, right.
This is exactly what you're asking. You don't know what you're asking.
Right, right, yeah.
I don't even think this is possible with drugs. So,
I definitely get the caveats because I, being on a podcast or making videos, you realize that every sentence you say can be scrutinized. And because of that, I've noticed I almost have a hard time speaking now without qualifying statements because I just sometimes I just say, okay, I understand this is based on that and that and that. And it's almost an annoying way to converse, but you kind of have to do it to some degree. But I think the main thing is, as long as your audience understands those principles, then I think it could just not be brought up that much. Like, imagine if you were watching like a a finance channel or something. And I'm not somebody who's big into talking about, like, you know, your privilege and all that stuff. But let's just say you're watching this and every sentence they said, you know, okay, you want to do this investment. Oh, but by the way, it's like really based on your privilege. And if you're in a third world country, like, this isn't going to work for you. It's like, yeah, I get it. You know, if I was, you know, born somewhere where I'm, you know, paying with stones, this is not going to work. Like, I get it. I don't need to hear that every sentence. Can I just get on to, like, the meat here of how to, you know, in this case, have my investments?
Right. That's why the biggest channels, often they don't spend a lot of time with that kind of qualifying language, because most people don't want to really hear that. And it does, it's not even that it's, you know, annoying or that it requires more thought. It just, like, spreads out the content that you get.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's like something could take a minute to talk about, and now it's like 3, 4, 5 minutes because of all these, you know,
totally.
Oh, but it depends on this and this and this.
Yep.
And it's almost like the evidence-based sort of the meme of it depends.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You need, like, the nuance, but you don't want to just constantly talk about the nuance.
Yeah. So I try to strike a balance of that. And I think for me, a good guideline is if the video ends up being over 20 minutes, then I try to chop some stuff out.
Yeah.
If it's under 10 minutes, well, then I probably should have combined it with something else or gone into more depth or something.
Yeah.
And they almost always end up being 10 to 20 minutes without even trying.
Yeah.
Just because
that's,
I don't know, maybe based on practice, that's just how long I end up talking for, pretty much.
I think it's a very digestible amount for a single topic. Every once in a while, I'll have something that goes longer or shorter, but 10 to 20 is pretty good. Do you feel that, this is, I think I just saw Basement Bodybuilding, Landon from Basement Bodybuilding, talk about this, and he was saying that he believes a lot of the training, I don't want to say ideologies, but some of the focus in training has been skewed by competitive bodybuilding. And I think in his example, he was saying that he thought forearm work was really important, maybe even more than leg work for some people. I don't want to take it out of context, but basically to say, and I agree with that overall message. I mean, we've talked about Greg O'Gallagher, you know, Kino Body a little bit, and, you know, people could say he's got kind of skinny legs and maybe he doesn't do lots of squats and deadlifts and whatnot, but the guy has got a physique that a huge, huge proportion of the population would like. And I'm sure almost any high schooler or those in college would love to have. So there's a reason that gets a lot of attention. And even, you know, that's not maybe Landon's target audience, but I would say that most people focus more on upper body and stuff. So do you think that there's been a skew because of the bodybuilding content?
I think, yeah, potentially. I watched your episode with Greg. I think it was a while back.
Yeah.
And he seems like a really good guy. It's just that his marketing is it's something.
Right.
And so, And, you know, he's legit strong. And yeah, I would say you'd be hard pressed to find someone who wouldn't want to swap physiques with him. Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he looks great. And it's one of those things where maybe it's from powerlifting, because powerlifting is sort of a lower body dominant endeavor, just, you know, squat and deadlift. That's going to be 80% of your total, you know, 75% of your total, depending on you know, the bench or the ratios, et cetera. I mean, but there are people out there who they have a poverty bench and they're very, very good powerlifters.
Yeah.
Because powerlifting is, it's a hip and knee extension contest. You know, that's essentially what it is. There's technique involved, you know, obviously I'm not cheapening it. Don't come after me. Okay. But you know, it's very lower body dominant, especially if someone is pulling sumo. And so, you know, it's, I think for a lot of people, they don't want huge quads or huge hamstrings. I think they look cool. You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to stop training them by any means, especially if you want to maximize that FFMI, you know,
right.
You're kind of, those are the biggest muscles in the body. But yeah, for the average person, I think sometimes they have this guilt over skipping leg day, or even just like only training legs once a week. I can't tell you how many people I've had, clients or otherwise, where they're like, you know, so can I just train legs once a week? Like, is that okay? And I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't it be okay?
Right.
Like, well, I know I've heard you need like frequency to maximize it. I'm like, well, do you want to maximize it? Like, yeah, I have to maximize everything. No, you don't. no one, I mean, it's people who, it's that same mindset of like reaching your full muscular potential. You don't have to do that either.
Yeah.
Right? Like I get these DMs from people who are like, so how long is it going to take me to get to this FFMI? I have to do this because I want to look like this and this guy. I'm like, wow, you're like way off in terms of like what you should be focusing on.
Right.
Like, what about enjoying lifting? Right. Like that's what I've been doing this past few months as well after the cut. Like I post my training on Instagram with stories and a couple people are like, why are you doing this exercise? Like biomechanically, this is devastatingly bad. And I'm like, yeah, I just like it. And they're like, what do you mean you just like it? Yeah, I just enjoy it. They're like, I mean, they just wouldn't fucking understand. I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know how to explain it in simple. I just like it. They're like, so it's not optimal. I'm like, yeah, so it's not optimal. Why are you doing it? Because, and it was just this circular thing.
Yeah.
That I just gave up, you know. I didn't block them. It's tempting. But, you know, sometimes I just do training because I like it, you know. Or, you know, I wanted to do seated barbell press, and there's one rack at the gym, and, you know, people were using it, and so I was like, I'll just do something else. I'll do a machine or do something else. And so, you know, I think a lot of people should probably start from the enjoyment side of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, progress towards something more serious. Whereas people start super serious and then they don't even seem to enjoy it at all. I'm just thinking, like, what a waste.
Yeah, I think it's a huge factor because, I mean, you know, if you look at Brian Borstein and his physique when he was doing CrossFit, I mean, he was like 90%+ of the way there. We just with CrossFit. Yeah. And the enjoyability is huge. I mean, these days, if I think of when do I enjoy working out the most, it's honestly when I go on vacation and I just go to the gym and just do what I want. I'm not focusing on the PR. I'm just picking some machines that I enjoy. I'm getting a pump. I mean, I'm still training hard. Sometimes I'll be going with friends and like, that's always fun, but there's not this, like, I have to beat this thing with the optimal exercise. Cause I probably would, if I was doing long-term, have a, I don't know if you'd call it guilt, that I'm doing something that's maybe not ideal, but if I'm just on vacation or everything, I just enjoy it. And it, like, I don't know how else to describe it other than I enjoy what I'm doing there. I'll just put my headphones in, I get into my space, and that doesn't have to be, it's not like it's not doing anything. It's still doing 90% of what I want it to do.
Yeah, 100%. That's where I've been. That's been a big part of like how I've been training the past few months. And like, has it been perfect? No, like I can definitely see instances where it's like, I knew I would have progressed better on a movement if I had it in more consistently.
Yeah.
Because I do seem to need more time with a specific movement to see progression. And, you know, I do thrive on frequency. And so, you know, yeah, I can tell that it's not, you know, the ideal setup. But after like the 6 month cut and just going super, super hard, especially near the end, like I kind of just wanted to go in and do whatever, you know.
And what are you up to now, weight wise?
216, 218.
Okay. I'm catching up, man. I'm about 205 right now. So watch out.
Yeah, I'll probably go. I was like, I don't know if I should go to 250 or 350. And 350 seemed a bit high. So I think I'll just go to
250. 250 feels good on you.
350 would be, that would be, I'd have to buy a lot of new clothes.
And I think 250, though, you could probably maintain your body fat, maybe even drop it a little bit while you go up there. So you just get like a nice recomp up to 250, probably. With 350, you might need slowly, a small surplus. Yeah. So,
yeah, if I go slowly. Because, I mean, the last three bulks, I think 2019, I hit 212. And then 2021 into 2022, I hit 218-ish. And then the last bulk I hit 223, 224. So realistically, I'll probably end up at like 230-ish.
Wow.
Yeah. 250 is a bit optimistic, I think. and I do think that there is a bit of trade-off for health being 230.
Yeah.
I think even if you're in good cardiovascular shape, from a longevity perspective, you don't see many centenarians, 100-year-old at my first
centenarians, yeah.
Who are 230. I don't know any. They're all like, most of them are women, first of all. And then most of them are very light. And I think they're all pretty short too. They're just small bodied people. And that's part of, I think, what is good for longevity.
For sure. Yeah. I got my grandma McConey is turning 100 in, 3 months. So yeah, she's not thin. It's just I'm kind of like obese Italian woman, not like morbidly obese, but like a, you know, pretty hefty Italian woman. No exercise, but a lot of olive oil, right? So, no, but I mean, I don't think there's much debate that obviously genetics are a huge factor when it comes to that. So, but yeah, it's very interesting when you look at lifespan, because bigger animals tend to live longer, like as far as species, right? Bigger species live longer than really tiny species. And yet within the species, like within humans, smaller humans certainly are the ones that are living longer. And part of that, obviously, the older you get, the more things are going to atrophy and you just kind of shrink. But but even that aside, just even if you were to correlate overall size, like there's no way, you know, half Thor Bjornsson is going to be 95. Yeah, like, it's not happening.
Yeah, he'll be very lucky to make it. I mean, it's kind of morbid, but, you know, if he hit 80, I'd be impressed.
Yeah.
I think it's just a numbers thing, you know? And so this is one thing where I hear the line of, don't focus on, if you're natural, focus on health. And then they'll point to someone being, you know, in some elite natural bodybuilder getting up to like 230 or 240 in the off season and say like, oh, do you think this is healthy? Well, it's probably not as good for longevity as if they didn't bodybuild and they, you know, weren't as heavy in terms of the muscle and maybe getting up there, you know, into the high teens or maybe even low 20s in body fat percentage. But if they took steroids, they'd be way less healthy.
Yeah.
So it's almost like arguing two different things. And it's this sneaky fucking tactic that pisses me off where it's like, don't focus on if you're natural, focus on health. And then, you know, take these supplements along with the drugs to make sure you're healthy. Boom. Now they're making money on both sides of it, right? The anabolics and also the liver support and the kidney support and all the support. I'd rather take no support at all. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You can keep all that shit away from me.
I would wonder, though, and I don't know if there's any research. I mean, there certainly wouldn't be any direct comparison research here, but obviously, when you say steroids, that's a huge umbrella, right? And we don't know dosages or anything like that. But I do think some people just kind of, you know, they kind of wave away the fact that increased body weight and long periods of a surplus are not really that healthy for long periods of time. I mean, some people be so. I can't tell you how many friends I've had where they bulked up to, you know, maybe just in like the low 200s, but it was outside of where their body, I hate to say, you know, quote unquote, wanted to be. And they had blood pressure issues and maybe potentially cholesterol issues and everything. Now I have one client who's 350 pounds and his cholesterol is good. So it's going to vary a lot. But if you were to say, hey, you know, twin A is going to bulk up naturally, but go to like 240 and 25% plus body fat, and he's going to do that for years, versus twin B is going to stay at a lean 180, but let's say he's on super TRT, right? Maybe he's on 250 milligrams of testosterone a week.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that latter person is going to be less healthy. And I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, like at what dose does that lighter, leaner, maybe more cardiovascularly active person become, you know, more unhealthy than the heavier natural? I don't know, but it's not so clear cut just because you're natural, you're healthy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there is some hypocrisy where someone's like, I'm natural for health reasons. And then you look at their diet and, you know, well.
Yeah, or it's like, I'm really vegan for health reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
Oreos, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, but then again, like that can also be twisted where someone sees you eating like one cookie, and they're like, well, you said you're natural for your health. Well, it's like, you know, that can be realistically like what's going to be worse for your health, like the occasional indulgence or, you know, running cycles of anabolic steroids. So it's like,
yeah.
I think it's just the dose makes the poison. And the dose can be a high body fat percentage.
Right.
The dose can be, you know, from your diet. Actually, the Chinese have a saying, Bing Tong Ko Ru. And Bing is disease. Song is from. Ko is your mouth. And Ru is to enter. So disease enters from the mouth.
Mm.
Which, I mean, makes sense because your diet, it can either be medicine or it can be a pretty bad poison. And so, yeah, it really just does depend on the dosage of you know what you're taking in. And I actually saw some guy on a podcast, I forget his name, Brian something, where he's basically committed his body to science and he wants to live to 120 years old. And so he's taken like...
Is this like the billionaire dude?
Yeah, he's super rich.
Yeah, and him and his son and his like dad are doing it or something like that, right? I just heard about
this. He's the dad and his sons. He's trying to be as young as his sons, and he's like in his late 40s.
Okay.
His sons are like 17 to 19.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he has like 100 pills when he wakes up every day, and he's on a 2,000 calorie diet, and he said he was 3% body fat, which I'm not sure. No, he said he was 5% body fat. He's gone up, and he's got a little fatter, but... I mean, his face was very, you can tell when someone is very lean. Like right now, I'm not lean and you could see it. But he was like, I mean, it was,
yeah.
You could see the cheekbones. You could see all the details and like the temple and everything. So you could tell he was very, very lean. You could see like the muscles in his throat that don't really come out until you're
right,
you know, well under 10%. So yeah, I don't know if he was 5%, but he was close enough that it's, you know, irrelevant. And he said, I'm hungry all the time. Because he's constantly in a deficit because he wants to live as long as possible.
Yeah, Brian Johnson, looks like.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was. And yeah. So it was very informative. But I don't necessarily want to maximize longevity. My life would be very different. My training would be very different. My diet would be very different. Because I think at a certain point, if you want to maximize muscle mass, yeah, you are sacrificing longevity. I don't think you're necessarily sacrificing the health in the years that you have, but you might be chopping off some of those years at the end.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, if you bulk up in an extreme way, I mean, yeah, you might be, you know, asking for diabetes or high blood pressure or something. My blood work is pretty good, overall. And so, you know, I'm not too worried about it, but you know, just because my blood work is good at, what was it? 97 kilos. So 215 ish, 214. That doesn't mean it's going to be good at 230, right? Like that extra weight can definitely
help. Yeah, there's a lot more to it than, I mean, this was probably one of the flaws with people who were heavy in anabolics is, you know, obviously the worst case was that they weren't checking things at all. But then blood work was talked about a lot. And it's like, okay, that's a big step in the right direction for sure. But then, you know, there's other things besides just things that are not going to get picked up in blood work, or at least not picked up until things are pretty far gone. So, you know, just something to be aware of.
Yeah, where it's like people say, yeah, I got my blood work. And I'm like, okay, so like, what was your HDL, LDL? Like, they're like, they don't know.
Yeah, right. You know? Doctor said it was fine.
I got it. Yeah, you have to get it and also check it and like actually know what it actually is. And so, yeah, there are people who they get their blood work and they just, they got it. They just check that off the list. But
yeah, I would not trust that your doctor is necessarily going to, I mean, I've seen numerous examples where doctor just said, oh, no, yeah, it's fine. And it's like, dude, this is maybe not egregious, but I would not say this is fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially if you see something. Like, as a lifter, you should be healthier than the average person.
Right.
So sometimes, like, the normal range is like, okay, I guess you're barely in the normal range
for
this. But, like, do you really want to be barely in the normal range? Especially if you're in the process of bulking or something. Or if, especially if you're getting towards, like, 40 or 45 or something. So it's like...
I assume you've tested testosterone at least once.
I've never.
Oh wow, okay. It's interesting how much, like, you know, again, we see some examples. I know Lane Norton and Doug Miller have both talked about how their levels are top of the normal range, maybe even a little bit above the normal range. But then you look at somebody like Brian Borstein, and his is low normal. I think his was in the 300s, maybe 400s. Not and like mine's never been terribly high. So it is interesting because the study, I remember James Krieger had talked about that every 100 nanograms per deciliter correlated with about half a kilogram, so about 1 pound of muscle. So you could think, okay, so if your levels are 400 and you got them up to 900, maybe that would be 5 pounds more muscle. But, you know, again, when you look at some of these naturals, there could be 20 or 30 pounds of variation. Yeah, yeah. So it's certainly not, yeah, I wouldn't even say mostly testosterone.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. And I certainly have had DMs from people who are like, how high is your testosterone? And I just said, I've never gotten it tested. They're like, oh, it must be high. Hmm. And I'm just like, well, maybe, like, I don't know. I assume it's, I mean, at this point, I don't even want to make any assumptions because, like, I mean, it could be 300, it could be 1,000. I mean, it's, I don't think there's really any way to know for sure.
No.
You know, I don't think it's like, oh, but I have a deep voice, or like, oh, I have facial. Like, I don't think those are really going to be necessarily indicators of, like, of anything really. And I also don't think, yeah, like propensity to grow muscle, yeah, there might be some correlation, but like there's probably, I mean, there's people who don't even lift who have high testosterone levels, I'm sure. Have a shit diet and they just don't even care, and they're a teenager or whatever, or early 20s, and they have like, they're walking around with 1200 or something. Like, just, yeah, it doesn't even make sense. But that doesn't mean they're going to have good genetics to build muscle, right? Like, maybe, but again, yeah, I think that 1 pound per 100 it kind of makes sense, but yeah, it definitely doesn't explain everything.
Yeah,
for sure.
How are you doing with the cardiovascular health? I know at one point, maybe a year ago, we had talked about, because it used to be, for people don't know, you were, you know, a decently high level cardiovascular athlete. I think you're you doing cross country, or you were doing more like
just track? Running. Yeah, running. I was doing track, and then I was kind of just doing my own thing.
Okay.
Like I never really enjoyed competing. I competed a few times. But I always like dramatically underperformed. Like I signed up for one meet and then I tore my hamstring like a week before. And so I was limping around the track and I still ran like a 55, 400 meters.
Wow.
Which is not great, but it's, you know, it's not terrible. And so, you know, I never reached my potential in any kind of performance or competition. So it's almost like a, you know, I benched 405 back in high school kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't have any proof of like, and I have all, you know, I don't even have my old logs anymore. They're on my old computer. But I was fast, but not world class. And that's what I always compared myself to. And so I just figured if I wasn't, you know, if I wasn't running like a 350 mile, like why fucking bother basically? Which sounds silly, but like that
it
was
does
just
sound silly. I'll just tell you.
It sounds, I mean, I realize it sounds silly, but that was just like the mentality that I had, right? Because, you know, with the times I was running, which again I won't mention because it'll just sound silly.
Just tell us, Jeff. Everybody's wondering now. Let's hear.
Yeah. I whenever I talk about it, I get people messaging me like saying like, oh, what could you do for a 5K or something? And I have some pretty distinct ideas that I won't share with anyone because, you know, again,
what about your best mile time? You want to share that?
What, my best in competition? Well, it's silly because I competed in high school and then I trained for like 6 or 7 years after high school.
Okay.
Until I was 25 and I started lifting. And so I think my best mile in high school was maybe like 4:55. And then a few years later, I'm doing like 8 and 10 milers at that pace. So it's like things progressed a lot from there.
So what you're saying is you could break a 4 minute mile.
That was a goal of mine, but I never hit it.
Yeah.
Because like, there's no point in running a 4 minute mile, you know, on a dirt road somewhere in the middle of nowhere and then measuring it on a satellite imagery. Right. You know, what's the point? And so I have some ideas about, you know, based on track workouts, roughly where I was. But again, like, you know, different life.
Yeah. It'd be so interesting to me to see what you or Steve Hall, so people who don't know, Steve Hall was a runner and I think a pretty decent runner as well. If you guys were to do that now, you know, at your bulked up state, I'm sure you would still have a surprisingly good performance for your weight, but obviously a much worse performance, you know, than it used to be.
Yeah. It's like when I think I ran, I could still run 6 minutes now.
Wow.
I know I could for sure. And it would probably piss off, my body because I haven't been running that much.
Yeah.
But I know, like, gun to my head, I could run a 6 minute mile, even, you know, without much specific running training, because I'm still doing the bike and the incline treadmill. And, you know, there's a stair stepper now at the gym, which I've been using. Plus, it's just the muscle memory.
Yeah. Right?
It's just like I've ran thousands of miles under 6 minute pace. So the body just remembers, you know, it takes a little while sometimes.
Yeah.
It'll take a quarter of a mile or half a mile to like find my legs under me, but like I could still. And at the end of the cut, I would say, I actually ran a few treadmill workouts, and I would say I was probably in 5:20 to 5:30 shape, somewhere around that.
Oh, and you, recently?
When at the end of the cut. So
oh,
when,
the I end of the
like
cut, okay.
When I was like 190-ish or so.
Okay. And that was on a treadmill, you said?
Yeah. So that's, I mean, maybe some treadmills are calibrated incorrectly, but I have to assume, because it was on multiple treadmills as well. So
yeah,
I have to assume it's pretty accurate.
Right. Well, let's see. So you were 5:20, 5:30. At the end of my cut, I did a 6 minute mile, which means if I trained for it, I could have done 5:30, which means if I lost a little bit more weight, I could get like 4:30. So I'm like right there with you, buddy.
Yeah. That checks out. No disagreements there.
So what's your current cardio training? And is it mostly for health, or is it just because you enjoy it?
A mixture. Yeah. Just both. Before, I mean, when I was a runner, it wasn't for health at all. In fact, it was maybe not the most healthy, because I would just train myself into the ground. I think a lot of high-level endurance athletes, it's not healthy, right?
Oh,
like
no.
When you see these guys running, you know, pounding out 100, 150-mile weeks.
No, definitely not healthy.
That's not healthy, either orthopedically or even cardiovascularly, or even from a body composition standpoint, right?
Yeah.
Like, you see these guys where, sure, the genetic elite can stay lean doing that, but a lot of them have just this sort of this permalayer of cortisol-induced fat.
Yeah, right.
Maybe water retention, but they probably get leaner if they stop running and focus more on their diet. And I've experienced that. And it sounds ridiculous to the average person, but it's just so much activity. It makes you hungry. It just puts you in this state of stress. Especially if you're doing it in the heat and stuff, it's just, you know, you're permanently dehydrated and stuff. And so before, it wasn't for health at all. It was just, you know, partly enjoyment, but partly just obsession. And then now it's more just still enjoyment, but more towards health. Like, health wasn't even a consideration before, but you know, now I'm 34 and 34 and a half actually. And, you know, so I think in your 30s is a good time to kind of get your shit together and focus on health. Because I can rely on my history as a runner for performance.
Yeah.
But I don't think I could necessarily rely on that decade I had of training for health going forward. I don't think it's like,
not.
Oh yeah, he was a runner before, and my body's like, we're good to go.
No.
I have to stay on top of it. And I also don't think lifting is enough. Even high rep, lower body training, it'll get your heart rate up, but then it goes right back down again. So I don't think they're really quite the same.
Milo Wolf and I were just talking about that too, because he's kind of he kind of believes it's not necessary to do dedicated cardio.
Yeah,
I don't know. I understand the studies with the step count and whatnot, but you know, I always try to think, okay, if somebody came to me and asked, like, you know, first people who say, hey, if you want to maximize squats, you only need to squat one time a week. It's like, okay, if you were to tell me I want to maximize, like, get the biggest squat in next year, there's no way I'm going to tell you to squat once a week, right? So it's like, what would I actually do for somebody coming to me? And if somebody came to me and said, hey, I want to maximize my health and longevity, there's no way I'm going to say do no cardio. Like, there's just, you know, and I'm not saying it's going to make the biggest impact in the world, but I do think there is sufficient evidence to show that there are extra benefits to dedicated cardiovascular activity.
Yeah. And actually, come to think of it, it's partly for health and partly for enjoyment, but it's partly just for functionality. It's partly just like, in case shit went down and I had to run for Vietnam quick, you know, if I got to get out fast, your boy got to be able to run for some distance, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Plus, where you are, you're going to stand out. So you got to be really fast or else everybody's going to
be. I got to be flash status for sure. And, you know, I don't think 20 rep squats are quite going to do it. Yeah. So, yeah, I had to focus on that a little bit, just, you know, for preparatory purposes.
Yeah. Sure. You had mentioned before how when you were 6 years into training, it's not like your training was bad. And that's kind of what I suspected as well, because I do find that there are some people who say, and I'm not saying you have done this, but maybe lean towards doing this, where some people will say, well, you know, I've been training for 8 years, but only like two was good, or I've really only been training for two. And it's like, look, even if you're training decently, you're still making gains those first few years. They still count. You know, if somebody, a client comes to me and they say, hey, you know, I did CrossFit for 5 years, but I've only really been lifting for one. So that means like I've got all of my progress left, right? It's like, no, you definitely just, you know, even sports to some degree. Like if you wrestled for 5 years, you have absolutely gained muscle, right? I mean, so I'm just curious, what are the big, because you undeniably have still made fantastic progress since, let's say, year six. What were some of those big changes that you think you made, other than just obviously going for longer?
So a lot of it was keeping more consistency with the movements in the plan and not just, you know, swapping them in and out or like random training or like training by instinct. Like, I mean, that is not going to be great for most people. And it certainly wasn't great for me. I would say I definitely went through a phase where I was doing like mind muscle connection, bro bodybuilding, sort of fluff and pump, squeeze, contraction, that kind of, all that kind of shit. I wouldn't say it was a waste, but like it definitely didn't do much. And then there was a phase in 2019 where I was doing ridiculous volume, and I'll just say that I survived, but I didn't thrive. Like it was just, if people see my workouts now and they're like, that's high volume. Well, I was doing probably twice as much.
Wow.
You know? I was doing like 50, 60, 70 sets of workout in some cases.
Wow.
And maybe like that was a base that you could use for later training or like transition or something. But I don't know. I think it was just excessive. You know, I think it's just too much.
What's your weekly set volume similar now, like these days per body part?
I actually stopped formally tracking.
Okay.
Because I didn't find that it was useful. That might sound a little bit silly, but I would just start chasing it. It would just become a number to try to beat next week or next
month. Gotcha. Okay.
That's what happened before, right? For a while, I actually didn't track it. And then I tracked it. I added, because I still write it down, right? I didn't add it up because the process of adding it up made me want to add even more, right? So I added it up because people were asking me about it last year. And so maybe I'll add it up again at some point to see what I've been doing over the past few months. That has been helpful, kind of getting away from super focused on volume. I would say exercise selection actually was a big one as well.
Yeah.
Where I was doing fairly minimalistic training. And I was doing just a few movements per movement pattern, and they actually weren't that good movements for the areas that I wanted to develop. Like not a lot of arm work. And I think all the only hinges I was doing were sumo deadlifts and back extensions. I could actually check in my page and going by memory. I was only doing sumo deadlifts and back extensions for hinges, nothing else. So no RDLs, no good mornings, no stiff legged deadlifts, no hamstring curls, nothing like that. For squats, all I was doing were occasional front squats, and then high bar back squats, and then high bar pause squats. No leg press. My gyms didn't have a leg press.
Yeah.
Like a lot of gyms just didn't have equipment that I went to back
What's then. That recent leg press? I saw the post you tagged me in. Was that a new one you were adding to the mix?
Was it the V squat, like the machine squat?
You had posted and you said you're going to try this out, and you said not as long as Dave McConey. Those who know that one.
It was either the leg press or the machine squat.
It was a leg press. I was just wondering, was that just, were you doing anything specific with it, or was it just that you're adding in a leg press now?
I was doing like partials at the bottom.
Gotcha.
But I wasn't measuring as exactly, like, it wasn't as long term of a experiment as you've done.
Sure. Yeah, no, I got that part. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. So I'll maybe be trying out those leg press partials.
Okay, the partials aspect.
But they're pretty brutal. Because the sticking point is halfway up.
Yeah.
In the leg press, similar to a squat, right? And so you're trying to push as hard as you can, but if you push too hard, it goes up past the sticking point. It gets easier. Okay,
yeah.
Right? Like, if you imagine doing half rep squats in the bottom position.
Oh yeah.
You'll see what a lot of people do is they push up just high enough where they can kind of chill.
Because mm-hmm.
you can chill at a quarter squat with a ton of weight, mm-hmm. right? Anyone can quarter squat more than they can full squat, and even half squat a lot. So they'll go up to like where they can chill, probably like right around here.
Right.
And they'll do these reps where they're kind of just chilling at the top. And then if they have to catch their breath and rebrace, they'll chill at the top and rebrace, chill at the top. So I think it's kind of just the same as a normal rep, because like this last little part, I mean, it's
relevant. Well, yeah, just to clarify for people listening who don't have the visual, when you say quarter, you mean going up to a quarter squat, which in the context of partials is three quarters of the way up, not that bottom quarter squat.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you're doing like a leg press partial, if you push too hard, you go too high up.
Right.
And thus you can kind of just take a break at the top, even momentarily, which I think changes it. So you have to push hard enough from the bottom to get just to the sticking point and kind of like push at the sticking point and then resist it on the way down and push up towards the sticking point. But not too hard, not too mm-hmm. much, because, you know, then you go beyond it. So I don't know how good they'll be for partials. Because with a row, you can just pull as hard as you damn well can
from
the very start of the rep. And, you know, you'll probably hit technical failure on rep 5 of a 15 rep set, just because, you know, you're not going to get fully retracted.
Right.
It's like the top of a calf raise. You're not going to get all, you've talked about this, you don't get all the way up under your, you know, ballerina tippy toes.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can go as hard as you want on calf raises or shrugs or rows, like any of these clearly end range, most challenging movements. You can just go hard for the first moment, the first rep, just as hard as you can. But with a squat or even like a bench press or a press where the sticking point is somewhere in the middle, it's not at the very top. You have to, I don't know if they're suitable, because if you, the whole point of training and activating motor units and training the muscles is to push hard. It's to get those super high levels of effort that actually activate, you know, the muscles. And I think if you're kind of holding back because you don't want to push through that sticking point, I think it kind of defeats the whole point of it. I don't know. The stretch might be worth it.
Yeah. So calves, for people who haven't seen the video, the calves example I've mentioned a few times, is just that a lot of these people who I've seen say, oh, four range of motion. And it's like, almost nobody does true full range of motion on calves, because end range of motion, and with traps, right? It's that last few inches for a shrug is so much weaker than the first half, right? And the same thing with calves. Like, so if anybody wants to experiment, just go on your tiptoes on a stair or something with both feet and go as high as you possibly can. Even if you add like a 50-pound dumbbell, it's very unlikely you're going to get to that same range of motion.
I can barely do it with my leg sitting down.
Yeah. So right.
To be fair, I don't train calves very much, but like, it's just so much different than walking, and you never train that part of the range of motion. Like, ballerinas might actually be good at it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of us aren't ballerinas. And so even if you do, it just limits the weight so much as well. So I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things where even a bench press, right? Like, a bench press is a partial, a barbell bench press, right? Because you're not taking this, you're not like ending up over here.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Like, you're finishing here, and that's, you know, probably about half the range of motion.
Roughly.
Yeah. And it's the length of half. So,
did you just say you don't train your calves much, Jeff?
Yeah. I mean, they're still 17 inches.
Yeah, I don't understand. It's almost as if there's some other influence there.
Hamstring curls, Nordic hamstring curls, running probably actually helped as well.
Yeah, that is one thing, and it's actually interesting on like the argument of I've seen a couple people what's his name? He's the researcher with your similar name. I'm totally blanking on it. Brad Schoenfeld. Brad Schoenfeld has had that paper, or you know, calves are no more genetic, and we could get that could be a whole conversation. But one thing I will say is I think that because they are used so frequently, and somebody commented on this too, that they are just potentially closer to whatever their genetic limit would be, you know, just that baseline before you're actually dedicated to lifting. I mean, I've seen tons of cyclists and runners with great calves, and just, you know, especially if they're at a heavier body weight. And so that is, I think, one reasonable argument for it is just that daily, I mean, thousands and thousands of reps, you know, going all the time.
I think there's probably some genetic component still, though, because I mean, I live in China, and I see some fucking honkers of calves. Like,
you aging just, calves, man. It's just
you could take a bite out of those, and they'd still have a bunch just there. Man, I've seen some beautiful calves here. and, you know, I doubt they're doing calf raises. In fact, a lot of women, they actually get a surgery.
Yeah.
They cut part of, I guess they cut a nerve to one of the muscles in the calves.
I've seen that, which is crazy.
Except don't do this if someone's wondering about this, because it can result in problems and nerve-related issues. And yeah, I think, you know, embrace your big, wonderful, beautiful calves, Asian women of the world. Yes. They're succulent. I love them. We all love them. They're fantastic. So, you know, don't do anything drastic. You're beautiful the way you are.
I mentioned a few times that for me to truly do the experiment where I just don't train one calf at all, I could administer Botox to the calf muscle. Which I do in my practice, not the calf muscles, but to master muscles and temporalis muscles and whatnot. So if I really wanted to do that, I certainly could, but I think I'll
donate that your one. Body. Donate your body to science. Be like that Brian Johnson guy.
Yeah, yeah. I did remember what I was going to mention though, regarding it's kind of two things related to health span. So one is you talked about this reserve, right? You have the maybe muscle memory from running. I think there's a lot to be said for doing things at the appropriate time in your life. And, you know, if you're 45, I hate to say that you missed your window to put on a lot of muscle. I'm definitely not saying that, because I think you can still put on a lot of muscle later on in life. However, I don't think somebody who's just getting started at 40 is ever going to reach the same muscularity as if you started at 20. Same thing with probably any sort of athletic performance for sure. And I think there is going to be said for, if you're starting at a young age, getting to this, especially with muscle mass. I mean, cardiovascular conditioning can drop off pretty quickly, but you know, if you're gaining as much muscle as you can in your 20s, maybe even 30s, and then at that point, with the understanding that you're not going to keep gaining so much more, you can kind of just bank that and have that reserve and then focus more on mobility and conditioning, everything as you get older. And thankfully, you've kind of already put in that time to maintain that muscle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be jacked my whole life, right? And even if I, you know, because you have momentum as well, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, then you build up the habits as well and just the psychology of it. So, you know, once you've put in between 5 and 10 years, I would say, the best time to put in that time of building your physique is probably your 20s. You know, I was kind of a late starter. I started at 25, but I don't think that's too late. But yeah, if I think into your 30s, I think that's when the clock is ticking, you know?
Yeah.
We hear about like the clock is ticking for women in their 30s, but like, and I think for men as well, if you want to get swole, you know, the clock is ticking a little bit as well, or at least maximally swole.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think sometimes people focus so much on their career for the first education, and then it's career, and then it's, you know, and that's a big process. And then, you know, they get to like 40-ish, like, oh yeah, I should probably take care of myself at some point, right? Like, that's a thing. And it's just hard to claw all that back. Like, if you take a year off training, or 2 or 3 years off, you know, let's say you trained in high school then you come back to it after college. Like you can get back to it fairly quickly. I've seen that.
Yeah.
But then later in life, it does become more difficult. And most of the, you know, impressive older physiques that I see, and there are some, you know, guys who are 50 and 55, even 60 and still pretty jacked naturally. They never stopped. Never stopped.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have even a month off was inconceivable. Even a week off was like, you know, they just, even every day. So when people are like, you shouldn't train every day. Well, like, you know, maybe that's not the worst thing in the world if you balance it correctly, right? And, you know, of course, you can still make gains on like 3 or even 2 days a week as long as you're nailing those 2 or your 3 days.
Yeah, sure.
Right? If you're the kind of person where, you know, you miss a day and then it sort of spirals into, you know, not going for a week and then a month, yeah, maybe training every day and just having it be there and be there every day is not a bad idea. And so, yeah, whatever it takes to be consistent and to try to get that in your life as early as possible. Because you can kind of claw it back later, but it's difficult.
Yeah, and it's funny because you mentioned career too, and you don't want to obviously have your body, you know, lose health, or you don't want to have a great career at the expense of your health. But also, right. I think you could still apply those similar principles to your career in other areas. And by that, I mean, there's some of this, I don't know, FOMO and stuff that people, I saw one Twitter post, somebody sent me that. I commented on it in my podcast with Brian a while back when we talked about him being 40. And this person was saying, you know, when you're 20, just like take all these trips, don't work. Who cares when you're going to be 40 anyway? Because who even cares about being 40? And I was like, what? Like, it was like the worst post I've ever seen. And it's like, look, I am strongly in favor of utilizing your youth to have good experiences and all that. That's wonderful. But you can't deny that setting yourself up really happens in your even teens. I mean, like, that's one of the problems with like high school. I mean, I look at some people I went to high school with, and it's like, you know, there is nothing now at 32 that these people could do other than, you know, getting extremely lucky with maybe a career move to ever get to where I am going to be in my career and financially and whatnot, simply because the decisions were not made. Yeah, there's not the time, but also it's just not. People who are in their 30s generally are not then going to, let's say, go back to college and take courses and then go to med school or dental school or something. Like, the career path is set, and I would say even at an unfortunately young age. I mean, really, you got to be 18 and decide to some degree what you want to do. So I'm not trying to say
it's crazy how we have to decide our whole lives in some way that early. I mean, most 18-year-olds are idiots in some way or another. It's like, it's just part of being an 18-year-old, I think, especially 18-year-old man, like,
definitely.
You know, you're not even thinking about 10 years, let alone 5 years, like 50 years. I mean, it's just like, you have no idea. And so, yeah, I wish you could, if maybe you could delay college. Like, maybe that's actually not a bad idea to travel a little bit and start college at 22 or 23. Because I know a lot of guys who weren't really ready for college at 18, 19.
And that's the thing, right? Like, I think a lot of people maybe mentally aren't ready, but the way we are just set up, that's very out of the norm. And most people don't want to be, you know, when your friends are now working and everything, do you want to now be starting school with a bunch of freshmen? And like, it's kind of have this format. I'm not saying you couldn't do it. I'm not saying, hey, like, if you have dreams and you're 28 and you want to go back to school, that's amazing. If you're 50 and you want to put on muscle, 100% you can do it. Like, I'm not trying to say it in a negative way. I'm just saying that there is a lot to be said for grinding in your early years, not to the point that you don't have a life, not to the point that, you know, your health is going badly or anything like that, but maximizing muscle mass and everything, maximizing the career potential. Because you look at somebody like Brian Borstein's a good example. He worked really hard. He kind of set himself up with his gym and the fitness world. And now he can be 40 and have a ton of muscle mass and kind of, I don't want to say coast in his career, but I mean, he's even talked like he doesn't have to work as hard as he did. You know, I'm currently grinding very hard, but hopefully that's not the same forever. And I'm just saying, like, there's this, the topic of setting yourself up for later is just very interesting. And there is a time limit there.
There is, yeah. And I think late 20s to early 30s is when you kind of have to get your shit together as a man.
Yeah.
Like, if you're, you know, I noticed this as I was an English teacher. And there's nothing wrong with being an English teacher in China, but especially if you're just in the public school system, there's kind of like a, there's no progression. Mm. Like you're just the foreign teacher. You're not going to become the principal of a Chinese school, right?
Right.
It's not going to happen, right? It's literally impossible. And maybe if you're in some kind of organization, you can climb the ladder there. But, you know, you tell people, oh, like I'm 21, 22, teaching English. Oh, cool. Like, that's cool. Like 24, 25, I'm teaching English. All right. Yeah. Right on. And then it's like 26, 27, 28, 29, I'm teaching English. And they're like, all right, well, where do you see this going? And they're just kind of like, you're just kind of like, well, I don't know. I wasn't really thinking about where it was going. I was just sort of doing it, you know? And so, you know, I see a lot of young men and not as young, but still kind of young men. Because at 28, you're kind of young, but you're not young, young.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. Like if you're 18 and you haven't found yourself, good, right? Like that's normal. You know, and even if you're 21, 22, 23, but every year you add another digit to that 20 something, I think it changes a little bit. And like the perception of where you should be is different. And that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Because you should be progressing. You should be doing something either in a company and, you know, climbing the ladder or doing your own thing, but there should be some kind of progression. And I think if you're doing the same thing year after year after year, as I was, you know, because it was comfortable.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't a job I hated. That was the issue. It was a job that I tolerated and it was okay. Mm-hmm. It was comfortable. And so, you know, and I know that if I was still teaching now, I would be very miserable.
Yeah.
And that's not to say anything, you know, bad about people who are still teaching English. If you really enjoy it, you know, it's the right thing for you. And again, if there's no progression, but you really enjoy it and, you know, you're happy with that, it's fine. But I think a lot of guys, they want to be more driven than they are.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So they're not as happy. They're not happy with where they are. And so they're miserable. And they need to do something about it, damn it.
Right. Well, yeah, you don't want to be the oldest guy at a frat party. You don't want to be the oldest guy at the bar or any of that stuff. I'm sure we're sending a lot of people into an existential crisis right now. A lot of men in their mid to late 20s are, right, wake-up call. So related but final topic in as far as like the age and whatnot. Do you see yourself, because I could see this for myself, ever getting to the point where you just kind of say, okay, you know what, the peak muscle building phase is kind of over, and not that you're not going to still try for it, but sometimes we see this progression with people where they're not, they maybe drop out of the natural bodybuilding scene a little bit, and now it's like, whether it's like calisthenics, they're maintaining that leaner physique for health. And I think that's kind of an appealing thing. Again, I don't know how I will eventually go to that, but there's a guy at my gym who's got to be like 60 and he's peeled and like, it's just like, it's a good look, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not trying to be bulked up 20% at 60 years old powerlifter anymore. He's just embracing, you know, that health aspect.
Yeah. I think that's a natural progression. I think, yeah, the time to bulk is probably in your 20s and maybe 30s. You know, if a 40-year-old comes to me and they're like, yeah, man, I'll do whatever it takes. I want to bulk up and I want to build a lot of muscle. You know, a lot of me is like, hold on a second. Like, do you even know what you're asking in terms of like, because I think, yeah, at that point, you know, maybe it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if someone is like, you know, 18, 19 years old, and they're like, man, I want to go into a 400 calorie surplus. You know, I'm much more inclined to be like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, you're 130 pounds or whatever. You want to get big. Like, yeah, hell yeah. But I think the older you get, the less viable that is, and the less it just makes sense. As for me, I just look at it as like a trade-off, right? Because there's going to be a point when I bulk up, and then I cut down, and they're just like, well, I think I gained a pound or two. And I think at that point, you have to sort of weigh those things. And it's like, okay, well, is it worth trying another bulk and cut and doing things differently to see if like I could net some gains that way? But I think there's also nothing wrong with just sort of maintaining 12% or so. Like, I think for me, that would be fine. You know, probably 200, low 200s, so like 205 maybe. And you know, focusing on other things, on performance. Like, that's the time when I would be more interested in powerlifting. I get asked about that a lot. Oh, like, really? Oh, when are you going to do a powerlifting meet? Oh, when are you going to max out and do a bench cycle? I get people sending me bench cycles.
Really?
I wrote GVS. I wrote you a bench cycle. Get that shit out of here. What are you doing? I don't do that shit. But I might do that later when, like, muscle mass is kind of just like, man, right? It's not like I would give up on muscle mass, but I think realistically, if there's not that much more to gain, you know, maybe I'll just focus on other stuff, calisthenics, cardio. I actually filmed a video called Bodybuilding Side Quests a while ago. I filmed it like 6 months ago. I just haven't edited it.
Oh, it's not posted. Okay. Yeah.
It's not posted. It's on my computer. It's been there. Oh God. It's been there since before the cut, I think.
Oh, wow. It's
been there for like a year or something. Maybe I'll post it. But it'll be weird because I have like a different beard and stuff.
I was going to say, yeah, you're going to look.
This guy just time travels, man. No, but maybe I'll film an interesting intro where I'm like time travel or something.
Yeah.
But I had a whole bunch of ideas, like maybe combat sports. I think that was one I might be leaning towards. Yeah, just like jujitsu or, you know, not professionally or anything, just like fucking around, you know.
Jeff's in the octagon.
Yeah, I mean, just from a usefulness perspective, I think that's, running is useful.
I was gonna say, this way, if you get caught on your way to Vietnam, then at least you can maybe get out of it.
Well, now you know, you hear about the fight or flight response. I could do either one.
In there, that you case, go. Right? Right.
It's sort of up to me. You know, I've had the flight for a while, but I think having both is probably a good idea. Because I don't know how to fight. Like, people are like, man, you must be fucking deadly. No, what? No, not at all. I don't know. I just poke people or something. So
I've been trying to challenge a Kino Body to a charity MMA match for a while. You haven't taken me up on it. So one day.
Charity Bud Wrestling or something. No, so, you know, maybe combat sports, maybe more cardio, calisthenics, maybe powerlifting at that point. Because once you've built all the muscle, I think that's where, like, transitioning it into strength, you know, would make sense. Like, you're done on one goal. Like, I'm very focused on one goal at a time. That's just how my brain works.
Yeah. Right?
Sometimes good, sometimes not so good. But, you know, just sort of latching on to one thing. So, you know, that's why I haven't made a video on hybrid training. I've never done hybrid training in my life. I just have these leftovers from when I was a runner. And occasionally I, you know, see how fast I could run half a mile or something.
Yeah. I think both of those are natural progressions. I've seen, obviously, plenty of people go from bodybuilding to jiu-jitsu. We've seen a lot of that in recent years. And powerlifting, I think, makes sense because it's another way to progress, even though you might not be gaining more muscle. Sure. I think I personally would lean away from both just because they're both substantially more injury prone than bodybuilding. Yeah. Whereas I don't do calisthenics really much at all.
That's a good option. Yeah. Ring training.
There's a lot of untapped potential there where it's like, look, I might not gain any muscle, but if I can lose some body fat, I'll get better at those things. And there's still a skill component to it. And you don't hear about too many calisthenic injuries. So as kind of going with that longevity aspect, it kind of seems to be a natural progression there.
That makes a lot of sense because it's almost like the opposite of powerlifting, because powerlifting, to optimize your performance, especially for bench, yeah, it's like eat a lot of food, you know, get big, etc.
Yeah.
Calisthenics is the opposite, right? So you want to sort of lean down. Plus, it actually does work the abs quite a bit. So, you know, you'll actually see the abs when you lean down. And man, calisthenics athletes, they look fucking amazing.
Yeah.
They look great.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good look. And, you know, if my, you know, 26 inch legs shrink down to 23, like, I'm not attached to how I look, right? Like, I don't really care that much or care as much as people think I should.
Well, you also, I think you're fortunate in that you know, like I think of certainly myself with my very long limbs and kind of like lanky appearance and everything. And like, if I lose a little bit of muscle, it's like, all right, I'm going to look pretty lanky. Whereas you could still lose quite a bit of muscle. And with your, not only just overall muscle mass, but your shape, if you become a calisthenics bro, you're just going to be a super aesthetic calisthenics bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's one of those things where, yeah, I think especially with the waist size, and then with the arm insertions, as well as the traps. Yeah. Like I could probably go distance run for a year and still have traps. Right. I had traps before I ever lifted a single fucking weight.
Yeah.
Like they're just, I think they're just genetic. Like I've seen some family members, they just insert really high up.
Right. Right.
Which it's like a sail, you know, like the sail of a ship. If one end attaches really high, it's just a bigger muscle.
Yeah.
Right. Like you have the jib or whatever it's called, and then the mast.
Yeah.
And then the sail is in between. So if you have a really tall mast or a really long jib, the sail is just, it's just a triangle, right? So it's just going to be bigger. Yep. So, you know, because of the high attachment, like some people have big traps, but they don't have the high attachment. So you can't even see them from the front.
Right.
Right. And so they have traps. They're just sort of like hidden.
Yeah.
So yeah, I try to be like transparent about some areas that I don't have like some magical trap building method or something. Like there's no trap ebook
coming out. Yeah, right, right.
buy my trap ebook or something.
Right.
That's just, you know, that's the kind of thing where I can be specific and just say like, yeah, that's just genetic. Like when someone's like, how can I get your traps? Time machine, different parents or something. I don't know. Like, I don't know how that would work. You'd be a different person, but
Almost like Ben Pekulski's calf and leg book that he put out is.
Oh God! Well, not a huge fan of it.
Yeah. So, all right, man. Well, I think we touched on everything I wanted to bring up. When I put that video out, like I said, maybe we could do a roundtable soon. Get all the guys together. That'd be good.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool. So, where can people find you?
Just Jeffrey Verity Schofield or GVS on YouTube, and then Instagram. I actually haven't posted on Instagram in like 3 or 4 months. I got out of the habit of that.
Stories and stuff.
Yeah, it's all stories. So
yeah,
you know, I'll post probably 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stories during a workout. Those are pretty easy to put out. You know, it just takes a few minutes. Sometimes I do a voiceover, just show some sets, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Cool, man. All right. Well, we will have all that below, and we'll talk soon.
Cool. Thanks for having me.